This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me at Conquest3 and I'm here with Wheelie Dealer at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. This is Twin Peaks Investing Podcast number 80. 80. You know, Pete and I are beginning to look like we're 80. We've been doing this that long. You know what I mean? It's scary. Did we start with hair, mate? You know, it's like mad.
Mate, I'm older than 80.
Crikey, it's madness. Anyway, ladies and gents from around the world, welcome and thank you for coming back. The last two podcasts we had Golef Massa, Ben, on here, brilliant guest that we had, and we had Lemming Investor, we had Elric on here, and you both absolutely, well, both of our guests you absolutely loved. So this week is just Pete and I to put up with. We hope you don't mind. We'll get you another guest on here soon. I'm trying to organize to get a female on here because that's when Pete behaves his best. So we will see how that transpires going forward because we're always keen to get female investors to the share because we've got quite a few female listeners to the podcast. So Pete, how's it been? What's been going on? Have you been melting in the sun?
Yeah, I mean, you know, before we got on the call, we were sort of talking about that mental weather last week. It was just off the scale, wasn't it? The Monday, Tuesday. And yeah, I mean, I coped all right, you know, which considering my paraplegic state and the health problems I've had recently, I was quite pleased. I was quite pleased to still be alive at the end of Tuesday night.
Yeah, well, it was hot, mate, and then it just got hotter. We took a bit of a mini break and went down to Wales for the week. And it was really, really, well, I'd say down to Wales, across to Wales. It was really, really hot there to the point where it was last Tuesday, Wednesday were 2 days that we didn't really do a lot. We just stayed in, drank a lot, ate loads of ice cream and just didn't do much until late evening. Even then it was really, really hot. So yeah, lots of roads being melted and, you know, train tracks being wobbled. So
the thing that was really worrying was that fire in Wennington and stuff. And in this idea that compost can just catch fire. I mean, one thing I heard was to put water on your compost bin every now and again to keep it sort of a bit moist is probably a good idea. Because they can, I suppose the way they work, way a compost bin works, it creates heat and that heat is inevitably going to cause a fire at some point. So apparently it's rare, but you can see the problem.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure many people know this, but as a former firefighter, we used to get told quite a lot about stuff and used to be the farmers were keeping all the hay bits here and they did it. It just takes a tiny little bit of something to just spark it off and then across the fields. So yeah, it's just terrible. But I think the shocking thing was, you know, you mentioned that part of essentially Greater London, wasn't it? You have big fires in the part of Greater London. He's thinking, that shouldn't be happening, really. But that's what happened.
Amazing.
In that Winnington area, whoosh. Parts of, was it one in Croydon as well?
Yes.
The fire there?
Yeah.
So it's like, whoa.
Horrible.
You know, so yeah. So I'm just hoping that everyone's safe and the houses were insured and, you know, hopefully we don't see anything as bad as that going forward. But absolutely. Yeah, that's what happens with the heat. We don't seem to be prepared for bad weather, cold weather, you know, hot, you know, the droughts. We're like, come on, where's the infrastructure here, folks? You know, crazy. So let's move on from the weather, Pete. And let's just keep this as short and sweet as possible, Pete.
Hmm.
You are our political commentator. I know you do a lot of generalizing, which people go, really, you're talking nonsense, but keep it as unbiased as possible.
Well,
what is going on and where is it up to?
Mate, all I can sort of get a sense of is that there was a poll came out today. We're recording this on Tuesday, 26th of July, 2022. We started at nearly 6 o'clock at night. And there was a poll came out earlier today from YouGov, and Liz Truss, with the Tory members, still seems to have quite a commanding lead. And it's, you know, after there was a debate last night on the BBC, you know, which seemed to have come out with Rishi just a tiny bit ahead from the sort of polling afterwards. But amongst Tory members, and they're the ones who count because they're the ones voting, Truss is well ahead, and it really does look like she's going to get in. I mean, the thing that's really interesting about that is that her economic policy is quite different to Rishi's. With Rishi, we're really going to get more of the same, although it does look like he will probably have to do more of a giveaway where, you know, in terms of energy prices and stuff as we get more towards autumn, winter. But that'll probably just be targeted on vulnerable people. Whereas Liz Truss is talking about that kind of giveaway. She's talking about getting rid of the green levy on energy. And she's talking about a cut in income tax, I think she said. So I think it's a very different approach. Obviously, she's talking about putting the debts amassed from COVID, not actually starting to pay those off until in 3 years' time, whereas Rishi wants to be paying them straight away. So there's quite a difference. The argument being that Truss's approach is more pro-growth. Whether that will be the case, who knows?
Yeah, I thought it was quite interesting that I was having a few conversations with other people recently, and I said, just watch out as to what happens regarding Jacob Rees-Mogg. And he's come out and he's backed her. And I used the word asset in the sense of he's an asset to her, and he could be quite influential regarding getting some votes her way. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, obviously, if Liz Truss does win, he gets to keep his job, which no one knows what it is that he does, because he doesn't seem to do a lot. I know if Rishi gets a job, he may not get a job.
Yeah,
you know, so interesting times ahead, but lots of shenanigans are going to be at play as to who actually leads. Lots of power broking and what's it called? Negotiations are going to be held between now and end of August, last September, before we know exactly who wins.
Oh, definitely. The other interesting context to this is that earlier today, I think it was it the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, came out with its latest sort of global forecast and stuff, and it's revised down growth around the world. But it's also saying again that UK is going to suffer worse than anybody. The only people who are going to suffer worse is Russia, which, you know, you sort of think, goodness me.
Say that about Russia, but Russia is actually paying off some of its debt and actually doing well because of the oil prices just kept gone like that.
It's horrendous.
You know, so you're doing better than the UK right now, Russia, mate. Crikey.
It's appalling. Know. But that leads to the other issue, the other thing that's coming around today is that Gazprom, you know, the Russian state gas oil provider, if you like, is tightening the tap. And Europe has now sort of done an agreement within the EU that all of the states will cut their gas usage by 15%. It's a voluntary agreement. So how sticky it will be, and there seems to be all sorts of derogations, which basically means you can totally ignore it. It's the way the EU works. So it's obvious that, I mean, they are talking about gas rationing in lots of Europe, and that is going to impact us. It looks like gas prices, electric prices are going to absolutely rocket in the autumn. They're talking about, for us here in the UK, they're talking about a 60% rise in the autumn, then another rise in January. I mean, it's just getting bonkers.
Yeah, it gets bonkers. I don't give tips on here, but if anyone's listening and they've got a chimney, go out and get yourself a wood burner going forward.
No!
Start stocking up on wood, mate. And start buying yourself a wood burning stove, mate.
You can't
honest
do that.
To gosh.
That pollutes the environment and will be.
I know, mate, but you know, ESG's going to go out the window going forward. Everyone's going to be burning wood, mate, going forward.
Do you know what?
You're turning off everything.
There was this geezer on today who was a former head of something on Sky News or whatever it was. And he made an interesting comment. I don't know how true it is. Like all these things, we never know. he was saying that part of the whole Russian strategy and the invasion of Ukraine was all about stopping Europe going headlong towards green policies and going more into renewable stuff, because Putin and the Russians can see down the track that there isn't going to be demand for oil and gas. So they're thinking, we stay in power, us and our cronies, our kleptomaniacs, whatever, we stay in... Oh, God, what I just said. We're toast.
Do this all the time, mate. Drop us in the poo.
Right, I won't mention China. Right, they want to keep us... They want to keep supplying oil and gas, and they want to stay in power. And they obviously get the revenues, as you said, from the oil and gas, which means they can, you know, whatever. So, I mean, whether that's true, God only knows. But I thought it was an interesting theory.
It's an interesting theory indeed, mate. And one that's probably going to gain a bit of traction going forward. Right. Markets, Pete. Been up, been down. And I've got some numbers here. We're closed out today. We're at an intraday high of on the FTSE 100 of 7,365. And then the latter part of the mid to latter part of the day, we ended up closing at 7,306, still above the 7,300, which isn't bad considering all the noise and headwinds that we've got. So 7,306 is where we finished, more or less flat. The FTSE 350, lots of movements. That's been quite volatile of late. 19,568, down 1.18%. So that's more significant moves.
Yeah.
FTSE All Share, 4,033, minus 0.19%. FTSE AIM All Share, 898, still below, again, been fluctuating, back again down below 900. 898, down 0.4%. When we started, or just prior to us starting this call, the Dow was at 31,841, down 0.5%, down 0.47% to be precise. S&P 500, 3,925, again, still below that magic 4,000. That was down 1.05%. And NASDAQ, still well below that trigger 1,300, is at 11,582, down 1.7%. So interesting markets, really, Pete. They're still undecided. See a lot of people coming out of the woodwork last week. And we need to congratulate some people as well who had some significant wins last week. Markets actually gave some people a little bit of something to cheer about. A lot of people were up 2+%, 4%, 6%, and so on and so forth, which, you know, in this particular climate, you know, if you're down 25%, 30%, getting that sort of movement in 1 week is great. It needs continuity, and that we don't know. See lots of people talking about the bottoms in, the bottoms in, bottoms in. I'm still undecided. If I had to put money on it, I'd say the bottom's not in. But we'll see. And I want to be proven wrong, because I want everyone's portfolio to do well. I want my portfolio to do well. But there's just too much noise. And this inflation stuff you're talking about, Pete, and the energy prices and so on and so forth, squeezing. Seeing all these companies coming out last week, profit warnings. Sorry, Pete, I have to chuckle. Because last podcast you were on with Ben, and you said, oh, I've been all right for podcasts. Yeah. Next day,
profit warning. Yeah.
So let's interrupt there. Which one was that one again? The one that hit you first?
Well, MPAC hit me, didn't it? MPAC,
MPAC straight after Fever. Ben.
Fever Tree
came out, and then MPAC. So you do a third if you don't have another third one yet.
I had Hotel Chocolate as well.
So you've had three on the bounce, mate.
But three. The amazing thing was, I actually had a good week last week. My portfolio was up about 2.5%. So it's one of those as I said on the podcast, you know, I was quite amazed at how few profit warnings I'd been hit by. And I just knew it was going to catch up with me. And that's exactly what's happened. And it's interesting. We're definitely starting to see it, where we're getting a real difference between stocks that are coming out with warnings and the stocks that are doing okay. And I was reading through the RNSs this morning, as I usually do, and obviously one that was hit today was Wix, W-I-X, that got battered. Yep. But I think ones that have had reasonably good results, Unilever surprised the upside.
We'll
I think
talk about that later. Yeah.
And Dot Digital DOTD surprised to the upside. Yeah. So you know, there's still this sort of mixture, but you can't help thinking that so many. It's like consumer-facing companies like Wix are obviously in trouble, right? That's just a sort of given. So anything consumer-facing, restaurants, pubs, shops, anything like that. But you can't help thinking that some of these other companies that are businesses that supply businesses, ultimately, a business that supplies a business somewhere along the chain is supplying another business that supplies a consumer business. And it's these chains, and you sort of think, how long can some of these companies get away with it? I think there are probably very few companies that can really get away with a real proper economic difficult time. And it's things like the AstraZenecas, the Glaxos, where the demand is pretty resilient demand, whatever. But I think they're quite exceptional companies.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the bit that I always focus on, and I've been having a conversation just this morning, actually, with somebody with regards to the supply chain stuff and the costs. You know, it's all this cost stuff that's being added on, Pete, Not only can you pass it on, but I think if you've got the prime example is Unilever, AstraZeneca, GSK. If you've got manufacturing sites in the countries you're supplying, you're not dealing with the shipping. You're dealing with the logistics, taking it across the rest of the country.
Yeah,
or the rest of the continent. You're not dealing with the shipping costs, which have been absolutely ridiculous, you know. And equally, getting the actual, use the word crude word, ingredients or raw materials to where you need to have it for the manufacturing, you know, all of those costs are creeping in now. You can see those little lines being drawn regarding the ones that are actually able to deal with these massive headwinds. Now you had. Going back to the profit warnings, because I'm not blaming you, Pete, right? But you triggered off a chain of profit warnings.
Oh, I did.
Back 2 weeks ago. You said that those immortal words on the podcast, and I got smashed.
Oh, mate,
indirectly,
I'm sorry.
First, I got smashed by Sabre coming out with a profit warning, Sabre Insurance.
That was a weird
because
one.
Of the cost of repairing the vehicles and the mechanics and all those costs. Inflationary costs, smash Sabre, and DLG got, and I was like, and I wasn't happy. A week later, what happens to DLG? It comes out and says the same thing. Wallop absolutely got smashed, right?
Mate, I have to humbly apologise to yourself and all listeners for
all the shareholders. Yeah,
and in future, I'll try to be more careful.
But then, mate. S4 Capital comes out. You know, I've read into it. You know, we've got Sir Martin Sorrell entrusted with. He's gonna come out and he's gonna beat WPP up, and he's gonna grow S4 up to be the same size, if not bigger, and then he's gonna consume WPP. It's all fantasy story. I'm just making that bit up. He hasn't said. But you know what I mean. And I'm like, it'll be fine. You know, £2, £3. Yeah, going up to £5. He's set this benchmark. He's only gonna buy companies 50-50. At this particular amount, which is way above where the share price is at the moment, fine. I don't know if I can say it, I'll get myself into trouble. But the RNSs historically have been worded a certain way to remain calm and we're bullish and all the rest of it. I read the RNS, mate, and I just went, and the words that came out to me, I've been pied. It's like, bosh, you know. It's like a tarot on TV. Pied, mate.
Oh.
And I thought, I'm going to have to find a gift that just shows someone getting a flan put in the face. That's how it felt.
Yeah.
You know, 40% down, mate. I was like, oh my gosh.
It's mad.
You know, you're thinking, thank heavens that wasn't one of my larger positions, but it's still a 40% hit on whatever you've got in the company.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, I'm just going to have to wait and see what happens with this. And other people, you know, sending me DMs and I'm on holiday. I'm like, I'll deal with that later. I replied to quite a few. I was like, I honestly don't know. Advertising's down. They've got problems with staffing. Let's see what happens. And the share price pinged in the morning, went back up, came down again, and closed last week reasonably, I think it was 120-ish or there, and now it's drifted again lower. I'm thinking, let's just see, you know, one of the guys on Twitter put out, Sir Martin Sorrell might be shopping at Poundland. Because the share price could be a pound. You know, someone sent me that and I thought it was ever so funny. But it's not funny really when you think about the share was a five quid, you know, not so long ago, and 8 quid before that. If I'm getting my numbers mixed up probably now, somebody will correct me. But it's been significantly higher. And it's a case of, I always concern myself with a stock that was doing well, that halves, then halves again. It takes so much longer to get back to break even, and it needs to do a lot in a very short space of time.
The only way that you can get stocks like that back to break even, as you say, is to buy more of them at an appropriate time. But it's really dangerous to buy more just after the first profit warning, because it will probably do more profit warnings. So those ones where I've had profit warnings, I'm just leaving them alone now. I'm not bothered about them. You know, they just do what they're going to do. I mean, one of them that got it was Hotel Chocolate, HOTC. That's a company I've wanted to buy more shares in for ages, but it's always struck me as a very expensive stock, you know, but a really good company. But obviously the difficult times have caught up with them, and, you know, it'll probably need quite a long time in rehab before it's in a situation where I can buy more of it. But obviously I'm going to be keeping on top of it. And yeah, that's definitely one I would like to buy more of, but it's probably going to be a year, 2 years down the line before I'll get to a situation where I'm happy enough to buy it again.
I think
on the thing of profit warnings, I think it sort of emphasizes how important it is to have a portfolio approach. You know, the reason both you and me can sort of laugh about the fact we've just had three bloody profit warnings is because we do have other positions. The ones that were warned are not particularly large positions. And, you know, we still overall on the portfolio managed to do okay. And that is what is really important. If you've got a very focused portfolio, say you were just holding eight stocks, three of them warn, obviously you've got less chance of getting a warning if you've only got eight stocks in theory. But if, you know, a load of them warn, you're in serious trouble.
And this is the problem, you know, and that's what led me to trim a little bit of AstraZeneca, because I don't know if that you know, it's a massive holding of mine. And when I trimmed that, I was like, took a sigh of relief. You know, if you've got, let's use a figure, you know, be conservative now and look at half the size of my largest portfolio and a bit less, 20%, 25%, 30% in one stock.
Yeah.
And it crashes 30% or 40%.
Oh, it kills you. Kills you. Yeah.
You know, so if you've got a position that's 3% and it goes down 40%, it becomes, you know, a 1%+ position, or a 2% position or whatever. It's going to hurt.
Yeah, it's annoying.
It's not going to absolutely just take your portfolio like that, where you're thinking, I had one person saying, "Oh, my portfolio is back to where it was just in February 2020. I'm like, wow. Okay, so I'm trying to help and support that person with regards to some of the things that they're doing and trying to get them to think about some of the things they've done in the past. You know, this is the hard thing about it. We're all, you know, I'm trying to phrase this correctly. Most of us are long-term investors, right? However, when you're knocked by a profit warning, two profit warnings or three, we start to get motivated by short-term sentiment. Yeah, we become short-termist and we start to react and we start to think differently regarding some of our portfolio holdings or what we should be doing. But actually what we should do is what you do, Pete, sometimes, and just take a step back, reflect and think and look at all the reasons why we should sell this stock. Yeah?
Mm.
Why should I sell it? And if you can't find any good reasons to sell it, then consider when's the appropriate time, like you say, to buy some more and just hold on. If you can find all the right reasons, it's a fraud going on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The CEO said something last week.
Then, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fraud. Yeah. The CEO, CFO said all this stuff in the past three to 6 months. And then they've come out and said something completely different now.
Yeah.
Get out of town. You know, if you've lost trust in the management, get out. If you can find a good enough reason to get out, other than the fact that, you know, everyone's been impacted by supply chain constraints. Yeah. Everyone's been impacted by, you know, inflation and energy costs, if that's the reasons why the share price has been impacted, it may well get through this all the time. Yeah. But if something fundamental has changed, it might be time to get out. This is what profit warning is about. Just one sec, Pete. And we had George O'Connor, an absolutely phenomenal research analyst that's been looking at tech stocks and other stocks for the last 20 odd years, absolute expert on the Investing Matters podcast. I highly recommend you go and listen to him.
Okay.
Because one of the things he was saying was profit warnings sometimes are a good idea. They actually create opportunity. And he's looking and thinking, oh, there's a profit warning there. Am I getting a better value? Am I getting a discount here as or an opportunity to buy? You know, especially if you don't own the stock in the first place.
Mm.
You know, if you do hold it and you bought it at £4, it's now here at £1.50. If something fundamentally hasn't changed and you're going to have to wait a bit longer, might be an opportunity. If you don't hold it, it's now available at £1.50, then you should start thinking about it. I think a lot of our investors ordinarily are momentum investors, are becoming more and more momentum investors, and they like to buy when things are going up and they don't like to buy when it's at a low. You know, and I'm always thinking, oh, where's that profit warning? I'm hoping it's not mine. And if there's a profit warning, I'm thinking, let me have a look.
Yeah.
That's when I start looking. Or if I see loads of people on Twitter get bashing a stock, that's when I prick my ears and I go, oh, well, let me have a look at that then. What's going on there?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the important things, again, I'll use hotel chocolate as the example. The other thing that I like about what hotel chocolate are doing is that they're taking action already, and they are already shutting down the Japanese operation, shutting down the American operation to a large extent, you know, which they are taking some pretty serious big moves. And that's what you need to see. You know, you don't want a profit warning coming out and them saying, oh yeah, you know, this is really bad. We're going to dust off the shelf to the right of the office. You know, that, you know, you want something meaningful that you can sensibly see will help them control costs and get on top of things, so you don't get another series of profit warnings and then the management changing and you go through years and years of aggravation and grief.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
I absolutely agree with you, mate. And this is the thing about, you know, I was talking this just today, actually, with a few people on Twitter. And there's a company that I used to hold when I held it. It was called Taptica. And it's now called, the name's just gone out of my head, Pete. It will come to me in a minute. No, it won't.
I can't think what, gosh. I know the name Taptica, but I can't think what it does or what it is.
You know, when you've been doing too much and you have that momentary blank. Yeah.
Mate, there's
Tremor International, Pete. Tremor International.
TRMR.
Sorry for my vacant, you know, blanks there, people. Yeah. I've been doing so much stuff today, my brain's just absolutely popped. But
how long ago was that Taptica? That must have been like 5 years.
I held that 2018, 2019-ish, something like that.
Oh, it's not that long ago. Yeah, okay.
Not that long ago.
Well, wasn't it called Rhythm One at some point?
No, it bought Rhythm One. I think it was. Yeah. Was it called that temporarily? It bought Rhythm One, Pete.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah.
So it was around that sort of time. And anyway, I bought it. It got absolutely hammered. And then I pulled up the truck and bought loads more, you know, averaged down. My own was going, you shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
And I actually made quite a bit of a profit on it and sold out. But what I noticed is that, you know, it's essentially a US company. But what I feel has always happened to it is that it's never actually got that sort of recognition that it should have had. Because it's an Israeli company. And you remember that tech company? I can't even think of the name now. You remember it. The other Israeli company that you and I both had. Remember the name of that one?
Tell it.
I am struggling today with names, mate.
Yeah.
But similar to that, it never actually got the appropriate valuation that it should have got because it was a Israeli company.
Yeah.
So I was having that conversation today and I'm basically asking these holders for Tremor, ticker symbol TRMR, which is also listed, dual listed now. It's on AIM, it's dual listed on NASDAQ, right? why has it got this discount still? You know, most of its revenue is generated in the US.
Yeah.
You know, versus its peers, it's at a massive discount. You know, and some of the, and it's possibly more profitable than some of its US peers, but it's still sitting at a massive discount in value. Why is that? You know, and I can only put it down to the fact of this, it's, you know, it's HQ'd in Israel.
You're so right. I've noticed it so many times that stocks listed in Israel can, and it's a big discount. You're often talking 30, 40% less than it probably would be if it was just a straight UK or American company. It's incredible the difference it makes. I'm just looking at Tremor on SharePad. Oh, well, while I'm on that subject, if you go to the homepage of my wheeliedealer at weebly.com website, right at the top, if you might have to scroll down a little bit, right at the top, there's all the details of a special offer that SharePad are doing, which runs until the 31st of August. So if you want to do it, you've got to move reasonably quick. We got a month. And basically, it's a 25-year anniversary deal just on SharePad, not on ShareScope, where basically it's like a 25% off deal for something like 6 months or something. Look on there, you'll see it, but you must follow the instructions on that link. Don't go through any of our other ways of doing it. Follow exactly what it says on that thing. And yeah, that's all I need. Yeah, that's it, isn't it? Anyway, where was I? Tremor. So looking at Tremor, it's on a, oh my God, that's amazing. It's on a forecast PE of 6.8. And then 2 years' time, that falls to 6.1. And I mean, that's incredible. Looking at the numbers, it appears to have a lot of cash. Although I believe it did a deal today where it bought another company.
It bought another company today, and it's using also 100 million of debt. Somebody will tell me what the correct numbers are. But that's what I'm saying. How many tech companies can you buy in the US on a forward P of 6.8p?
Bonkers. I mean, that would, in the US, that'd be 30. You know, it's like, that is unreal.
Exactly. So the idea was, you know, let's dual list in America. We'll be appreciated some more.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened.
Incredible.
And I know the market's had a wobble over for tech stocks, stock-related stocks for over the last 6 months, if not longer. But it was a discount when it listed over there, and it's just got worse. And I'm looking at it at the moment. Still too early. Lots of stocks are coming out. Anything ad related, advertising related. S4 obviously. Reach today got absolutely smashed across the rocks. Lots of people were into Reach RCH. So that's got hit today. Media, advertising, so on and so forth, just slowing down a little bit.
Conversely, Dot Digital, DOTD, actually had really good results today, and that's to do with internet marketing and email marketing and all sorts of stuff like that. So it is the classic mixed picture, isn't it? I've got shares in Kin & Carter, KCT. That had a really good update about 2 weeks ago, and it is a mixed picture. It's really not, it just makes it really difficult for us, doesn't it?
This is what I keep saying to everybody, and I keep saying it on this show, you know, investing is hard, right?
It is this year, mate.
Trading's even harder. The beauty of being an investor is that we've got a time frame of whether it be, you know, short-term investors are looking at 3 years, you know, really short-term investors are looking at, you know, 3 weeks, you know, for a catalyst they're in and out. But most investors are looking at, I'm starting investing now and I want to build a portfolio over the next 25, 30, 40 years, right? And you've been doing it 20 years, Pete, and you've been doing it in another 20 years. And you're looking at how much you've invested to what you've got, you know, 20 years from now, total of 40 plus years in its entirety, and you're going to go, job done, finished. Traders are looking, bing, 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 and looking at 5% here, 2% there, did it, scalp, 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 scalp. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I don't want to do 100 trades and get 50 of them right. If I'm lucky, if I'm extremely good, I want to spend my time trying to find 3 or 4 really, really good stocks that can multi-bag, right? And everyone's saying, you know what, it's really hard to get a stock to go up 100% or to find a stock that we can actually hold and go up 100%. It's even harder in this climate, right? And I see people saying, oh, I've taken a trade on this and I've taken a trade on that. And the next day, the share price has gone. And I'm thinking, well, okay, that shows the difficulty of trading. Yeah. But what about if you have just traded it now and it's gone wrong? If you did like it, why not invest in the stock and buy it and not trade it, you know, and just hold it and get a dividend for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years? I don't know. I think maybe, Pete, I think the markets are now showing who the real investors are. And it's been very, very, very quiet up until last Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then Friday, lots of people came out of the woodwork again because the markets had a good week. And I welcome everybody back. But we talking on here about consistency, you know, and you should be talking and sharing and helping other people learn. And that's how we all get better. Yeah. But do it consistently. You know, don't just pop up when the markets are doing well. You know, and if the markets are doing shockingly bad, and Pete and I have had, you know, I don't know, half a dozen profit wars between us in the last 2 weeks, talk about it. What have you learned about it? What are you going to do differently? Help other people. You know, you've made a mistake. Admit it. Have some humility. You know, don't chase your ego and go, I'm off. I'm not going on Twitter for another 2 weeks whilst this cools down. Share it. Talk about it. Be humble. You know, Pete, I put a tweet out, right? Yeah. And I'm going to share this because it really did wind me up. And I'm trying to stay calm as best I can. And I keep putting this tweet out.
Go and get a chalk ice or something. Cool yourself down a little first.
I try and just support as many people as I possibly can, right? And when I see a clump of stocks that are down 30% each, I always put a tweet out and say, look, this happens to all of us. You know, condolences to everybody. Sorry for everybody. Blah, 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 blah. Please don't go out kicking these stocks or these people that have all these stocks. You know, have a bit of consideration. Think about those people's well-being and mental health. And this person comes out, copies my tweets and retweets it and goes, that's what you've just done. And this person's been on my timeline, Pete, on and off for 3 or 4 years. Doesn't follow my account, right? Not saying he has to, right? But the only time he pops onto my timeline is to have a pop, is to have a dig.
What is that about?
And you know what? I'm on my holiday, Pete. Ah. And I was like, I don't swear that often because I've got my little one and I'm trying not to just swear around her, you know, and I'm not in the forces anymore. And I just went, not having it, blocked. And I saw somebody who does a similar sort of thing, only comes on my timeline to have a pop, liking the tweet before I'd blocked this person. And I went, you're blocked too. And I'm thinking, I'm not tolerating anymore. I've got people saying all manner of things.
Yeah.
Dropping me DMs and saying all manner of different things.
So stupid.
I'm not tolerating it anymore. I've got the best sense of humor, right, that my wife and my daughter can put up with. And I've got my friends and have my banter with them. If you're saying you're going to have a light-hearted blah, 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 or Conker's got no sense of humor, I've got a sense of humor, mate. I love nothing but banter. I'd rather sit on here and laugh with Pete for an hour and a half than sit there kicking the cat, right? Love going out, love socializing, love having the crack. And I thought, I'm on holiday. You know, and I've been putting up with this person popping on my timeline for 3 years now with nothing but negativity, not adding any value, not contributing to anyone else's learning, just having a pop.
Well,
I'm warning. I'm saying this now, right? And I'm pointing my finger at the screen for those who are not looking on YouTube. If you're coming on my timeline and all you've got to say is negativity, if you want to say, oh, the Twins Pee podcast wasn't this good this week, I can deal with that. We're always looking to improve it. If you're coming on my timeline, just have a pop about something I've said about a stock, right? Or something I'm doing, or telling me how to use my own Twitter account, which is what happens a lot, you're going to get blocked, right? So don't bother coming on my timeline. You know what? In fact, block me. Don't follow my account. Block me, right? If you don't want to see what I'm saying or you don't like what I'm saying, just block me, unfollow me.
You know, the thing that is so stupid about the constant negativity from some people is that it's not only that they're not helping other people to learn, they're actually hurting themselves. You know, if they were to be more balanced, more positive at times, more negative at times, whatever, you know, but being sensible and balanced about what they're saying and thinking about what they're saying, they would actually learn themselves and they would become better traders themselves and become better investors themselves. And that's where it's just really, really dumb. Anyway, mate.
The thing is, Pete, is this, right? I've done my social work, done my counselling, done my mentoring, done my coaching with all manner of different people of various different ages. And the recurring thing is this. The people that are focused on putting out, yeah, and forcing out negativity towards other people, the word projecting, right, are people or some individuals that are carrying that around, that have got stuff that they can't deal with or not choosing to deal with. And it's a case of, let me get this out and just push my issues onto somebody else. The people that are sharing kindness and looking out for the people and doing stuff and are being charitable and being kind, there's loads of those on Twitter. And I love and I thank you all for the kindness that you've shown me since I've been on Twitter. Thank you ever so much, right? But the thing that I'm trying to say is, and I keep saying about kindness matters, Pete, you don't know me. You don't know Pete. You don't know what's going on with Pete. You don't know what's going on with that other person. Lots of people, we've got our great friend, Steve Holdsworth. He's going through all kinds of manner of different health issues and all kinds of CRAP at the moment, right? There's people out there that need kindness, that need you to show them some sort of consideration, some sort of compassion. If you're showing out negativity to a person that you don't know, how do you know how you're impacting them? I'm quite resilient. I can put up with all kinds of grief. I put up with it for the past 50 odd years, right? But some people can't. So have a think about it before you go blah, 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 on Twitter to have a pop at somebody because you don't know what you're doing to them.
Anyway, on the subject of negativity, let's see what negative comments we've got about the podcast. But right. I just want to mention
the feedback we've had for Ben and Elric before him has been absolutely phenomenal. Ben came on the show. Go Left Massa. Big shout out to you, mate. He came on the show a bit nervy to start with, and he got into his groove and he smashed it. And the feedback he's had has been absolutely phenomenal.
All of our guests
have been absolutely phenomenal.
Ben did a good job on that.
I think the beauty of it is that you, Pete, and I, we try our best to just go like that and give them a warm, fluffy hug so that we say, come on, it's just us three, you know, having a chat and just relax. There's no airs and graces. And I put the question out with regards to the podcast and said, how did you feel about it and what are your thoughts about it? And I put it out to a few people that have been guests. And this is a recurring thing, Pete. It's about the fact that, you know, we're doing it off the cuff. It's a bit nervy because it's unscripted and I must have notes. And it's like, no. Don't come with all them notes. Just relax. It's just having a chat. It's completely unscripted. We're going to say things that are wrong. We're going to make mistakes, but it's just us being us. You know, we're not coming on here to ramp half a dozen stocks because we've written down all the notes and the PE and the exactness of this and the exactness of that to try and encourage you to buy it. That's not what it's about. And this is why this podcast has still been going for 3 years, right? Incredible. This is why this podcast got sponsored, yeah? Because of the authentic nature of what we're trying to do. We're trying to encourage learning, not to ramp the stocks that we've got, folks. So I thank you for your continued support and thank you for your continued feedback regarding the show, because without you, we wouldn't be here.
I want to mention the charity that we're supporting this year through the podcast, which is the Backup Trust. I myself am spinally injured. You know, I was, it's funny I should say that. Yesterday was my birthday. Now, what I mean by that is my second birthday, right? Like the Queen, I live in Windsor, so I can have two birthdays, right? It's the way it works. Everybody in Windsor has two birthdays, if you didn't know. 25th of July, 1998, it was a really hot sunny day, but the roads were very slippery. So if you're going to be riding a motorcycle on the 25th of July, 1998, if you ever go back in time, be careful on the bike because it was slippery roads, even though the sun was shining. Anyway, 24 years ago, I had my accident, got paralyzed 24 years ago, which I just like, wow, 24 years. The one that always hits me and I sort of think about is that I spent 33 years as an able-bodied person. I've now spent 24 years as a, I was going to say a word that I probably shouldn't use.
Okay, be careful.
As a disabled person. And what it really scares me is when it gets to 33, when I'm 66, and then I go over that, I'll have then been a wheelchair user longer than I was able-bodied. That's going to be quite weird. You know, it's
psychologically, yeah.
Me,
yeah.
I don't get flustered by these things, but just it'd just be a strange one to have lived my life longer. And I guess the thing to bear in mind is that, you know, for much of the first 33 years, I was a kid. And in a way, that doesn't count. So you could say as an adult, I've actually been an adult for a lot longer as a wheelchair user than I was as an able-bodied person, which is
a very good point.
Something sort of weird. Anyway, the point being that the Backup Trust is a charity that is focused on helping spinally injured disabled people. And they do a lot of great work with kids, do a lot of great work with skiing and with outward bound courses and with just sort of rehabilitation courses for helping people, you know, get back into society after they've had a heavy injury like this and all that kind of stuff. So it's a really great charity. I know them well. So it's a charity you can trust. You know, a lot of charities, you sort of think, I don't know if I want to give money to that. Will the money actually get to help the people, you know? But we're back up. I know them well, and that is definitely the case. Anyway, we've had some great donations from listeners. So thank you, everybody. Oh, I must just say, to make a donation, if you go to the justgiving.com/fundraising/TwinPeaks, if you go onto my Wheelie Dealer 2 website, go to the Twin Peaks podcast page, top of that page, there's a link that will take you through to it anyway. And Pete will put links up and stuff when he loads the podcast up. Anyway, just want to read out some comments we've had. So Andy C gave us a nice amount. Thanks, Andy. Brilliant. And he said, love the podcast. Pete's in you know, both of us. Great work helping investors keep their heads in these crazy times and supporting great causes. Thanks, Andy. That's fantastic. Pretty sure I know Andy. So that's brilliant. N20 Investor, he's given us a nice donation and a nice gift aid. Over a year on since I first discovered your podcast, and I'm still enjoying it. Well, that's quite a shock, isn't it, after a year. not only interesting, but it's a great learning tool for us amateur part-time investors. N20, you're no amateur, mate. You're a pro, right? Don't ever think you're an amateur. Right, next one, John T. Lovely donation from John. Thanks, mate. The value you guys bring to newbies like me is invaluable. Love the podcast and the way you're supporting a worthy charity. Thanks, John. Full respect, mate. Brilliant.
Brilliant. The feedback and the support has been great. Thank you all for making your donations. We've still got a bit of a way to go. We're going to run this until probably end of December, if not January, for the Backup Trust. They keep thanking Pete and I for pushing this. I did a nice tweet as well from, well, amongst many other nice tweets we've had recently, was one from Dave Glass, who's usually one of the first ones to give us a little bit of positivity. We're going to wish Dave well. He's looking to start a new job soon as well, so hoping that he gets some news confirmed on that. But he was basically saying that it was nice to the Twin Peaks podcast brings a bit of sunshine on the cloudy days, like a song, Pete. You know, remember that song? So thanks for that, Dave. We do what we can, and we try and keep things as balanced as we can, and try and be objective as we possibly can with this podcast.
Thanks, Dave. Nice one. I think at this time, and with the sort of climate environment, we want to be bringing icebergs on a sunny day.
Yeah, cool. So stay cool and calm,
mate.
Absolutely.
I wanted to ask your view on something. Yeah, which I often do. I use you as a sounding board within the podcast, which is incredibly cheeky.
Nothing about stocks, I know nothing about, Pete. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the way it goes. Right. Okay. There's been a lot of talk all around about food laboratories. So this idea that food will be created in laboratories. So I think the idea being it's like you know, to sort of try and get away from having cows and pigs and all that stuff, and sort of making protein, making stuff like burgers. I suppose it's a bit like Beyond Meat or whatever, making burgers in laboratories effectively. Because, you know, the theory being this would be better for the planet or whatever. Obviously, one of the companies involved in this is ANIC, A-N-I-C. Not actually sure what the name of the company really is. Let me just have a look.
But that's Agronomics, Agronomics.
Yeah, Agronomics.
Which is what I was talking about earlier about some of the bullies on Twitter. Agronomics.
Oh, don't.
Just threw you there.
Economics and agro, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what, I mean, the other one, this was funny. And it's funny how when you sort of start thinking about idea, and I think it's partly a psychology thing, when you start thinking about something, you notice other things, right, around. And something that I tripped over the other day, I was watching an episode of BBC Click, which is that sort of tech sort of magazine program that they do for half an hour on the BBC News Channel, which can be quite good, but it can also be a bit rubbish in parts. But anyway, they were talking about this company, or this company, I guess, that is making chocolate out of like carrots or parsnips or whatever. And it was showing the process of making this chocolate. And the lovely Lara Lewington, she was, have you seen it, mate? Lara, we like Lara. Anyway, so Lara.
Haven't yet. Sorry, go on. I'll see you smiling for all the wrong reasons, though, Pete.
You
so
need
I'll get
to
the
see
hits.
It.
Carry on.
Anyway, so Lara's eating this chocolate, and she literally could not tell the difference between, like, some chocolate had been made in this laboratory out of this stuff and like a real top end Belgian chocolate, you know. And it was fantastic and very impressive. But then the question hits me. It's like, what's the point? Is the first question. And the second question is, are people actually going to be resistant to it? Because there's also this drive for organic, healthy, you know. The idea of making food in a laboratory, I mean, I just don't know. And I sort of think, is it really going to catch on, or is it a load of old nonsense? Well, what was your thoughts?
My initial thoughts are, Pete, this goes back and stems from the use of water and the fact that a lot of manufacturing, food manufacturing especially, it takes up a lot of resources, you know, and obviously chocolate, cocoa, you know, a lot of it, where does it come from? Quite hot countries, you know, and a lot of stuff gets damaged in the process of getting the cocoa beans and the cost of doing that and all the rest of it. And I think it's about resources, maintaining a level of resource, and also whether or not, you know, the amount of chocolate we eat is on the globe, is it sustainable, you know? Is the amount of cocoa being produced sustainable? With regards to, you know, all these plant-based products and lab-based products, there's an argument that going forward, governments around the world are forcing farmers to stop, you know, so that the land can be used for other means. So I don't want to get into that political side of it, but the thing is, with technology, it enables us to do some really, really good things. Should we be spending our time using that technology to make chocolate? You know, the world is starving, right? Yeah. Could we not be using that sort of technology to create foods which actually could prevent or slow down starvation and other places?
This is the crazy thing. You're taking carrots and parsnips, which you could be eating as carrots and parsnips, and you're making it into chocolate, for goodness sake.
This is what I'm saying, Pete. Yeah. So there's always going to be technology that's used to innovate and do something else. Is it a good idea to focus on chocolate right now, given what's going on around the world? Me being me, I would say no. Would I prefer to buy Hotel Chocolat's chocolate, or, you know, Nestle's or other brands are available, folks. I don't know, Pete. I don't know. I think a bit like when we had the that other company that started doing the meat stuff in the US, and it
Beyond
just came
Meat.
Out. And it had a massive valuation. I can't even think of what it is now.
Yeah, Beyond Meat, wasn't it? Yeah,
Beyond Meat. Yeah, Beyond Meat. And again, that it's a phenomenon that's there now. We can do stuff.
Yeah.
But my focus would be utilize that technology around the world to reduce hunger.
Yeah.
You know, let's not focus on chocolate.
I mean, there's another...
Could agro do okay? Probably. Is it early enough at the forefront of it and all the rest of it? And absolutely, they could do really, really well. Is it a stock I've looked at with a view to buying it? No. Is it a stock that got heavy, heavy, heavy amount of noise on it a year and a half ago or so forth? Absolutely it was. And what's happened with the share price since then, Pete? You know, it's been up, it's been down, and
you know. Yeah, I mean, it went up to a peak about a year and a half ago, and it's sort of just been on the slide, you know.
What was the peak price?
I think
Anik.
The peak was about, yeah, it looks like the peak was around 33p, and it's now down at 19. But
yeah, okay.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's an interesting area. It's something to watch. Something that came up related to this, before we were doing the podcast, I always tend to have the news on for the, you know, a little bit before on the telly. And they were interviewing a farmer in the UK who was very much into organic farming and all that kind of stuff, and into small, low intensity farming. And she was saying how the way that people are taught to be farmers in the agricultural schools and that in the UK, it's all about big scale. Yeah. It's all about efficiency, big scale, buying lots of expensive fertilizer, buying lots of expensive seed, blah, 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 blah. And she was saying how what farming needs to be doing is going to smaller scale production, but actually having livestock. Now, that was a bit that really surprised me. She said, we need livestock, cows, sheep, piggies, whatever, yeah, because of the fertilizer, the poo, right, the poo that they create that then can be used for organic fertilizer. So it's a much more complicated picture than this idea that we can all stop eating meat. You know, you're not having any more steaks, mate. Forget that. You know, we can't just cut that off because we actually need it for the fertilizers. And a lot of the sort of chemical fertilizers we're using are really bad for the planet. So it's like everything. It is all so complex.
Absolutely. This is a circle of life, Pete. It's complicated and it needs
that's
to.
That's right. It's interesting.
If we take too many things out of the circle of life, something's going to be impacted along the way, mate.
Well, I've been saying for ages that one of the biggest problems we face as humanity is population growth. We've got something like 7 billion people on the planet now. They reckon by something like 2080, or certainly by 2100, whatever it'll be. We're going to have 10 billion people on this planet. I just don't see any way that can be sustained.
And you can see why these people in labs are going, let's create, you know, beyond, let's create meatless meat, you know, chicken, you know, chocolate, whatever, you know. I just think we should be looking at how we can recycle our water more, you know, how we can use less water here than everywhere. Because the resource that we need the most isn't oil.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't gas. It's going to be water, Pete, at some stage.
Mm.
It's going to be water, mate. You know, to sustain life and to keep people going. There's rivers that were there 50 years ago that are gone.
Yeah.
You know, there's maps being shown. This used to be a river, you know, supporting all of this side of this country, and now it's gone. It's dry.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not going to come in. That's not going to be coming back in a hurry, Pete, if at all.
Yeah.
So that's what we need to think about. Let's use all this technology to look at how we can improve what's going on with water.
Yeah.
You know, not chocolate. We don't need more chocolate, people. We're going to need more water.
Yeah. And I guess the other question, I mean, I don't want to sort of dwell on chocolate, but But I do like chocolate.
You are going to.
I'm going to.
What's your weakness? Chocolate, yes.
Yeah, mate, I've got many weaknesses, I'll tell you. But yeah, I've totally thrown me there.
You threw yourself there, mate. Yeah. And I know it's hot, but please don't go there.
Thing is, you could say, you know, we're making all this chocolate from, is it cacao, whatever they call it, a chocolate plant thing. But the thing is, a lot of these places, there aren't many plants you can actually grow in these places. You probably can't grow carrots in some of these hot places because that ain't going to work. Carrots are something that need a colder temperature. And, you know, so it's, everything is so complicated. And it's, yeah, well, as you can see with how all the supply chains have got disrupted and how the world's been tipped up on its end by COVID and then tipped up on the other end by Ukraine and how all of these interlinked, intertwined, very complex systems all of a sudden are just bloody falling apart, you know. So it's an incredible time. I mean, it's funny because as much as the stock market is horrible at the moment, and as much as the news is horrible, and as much as every year about the economy is horrible, and the fact your gas bill's going through the roof, blah, 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 it's a very interesting time to be alive.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the TWINPEETS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Very interesting indeed, Pete. And I think the beauty of what's going on right now is that we're learning far more about each other regarding what's going on and how we're viewing the world, even if you're just looking at the UK and its politics. Some of the stuff I'm seeing on Twitter, I'm going, I never thought that person would think that way. But politics has that thing, you know, it really triggers some people, Pete, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Just like football teams trigger certain people. You know, politics, religion, football team, sports. I don't know. We will see. We'll soon have a new leader in the thing, whether it's continuity or not. Let me just share this stock, Pete, because I've been keeping my eye on it and I saw the results today. So I'm going to share this one with people as to one that seems to be navigating the waters, using the water analogy again, okay-ish. And ticker symbol is FRAN, Company Franchise Brands, Pete. Yeah?
Mate, isn't there a problem with that one?
No, it's a good one. It's good.
No, isn't it in a bid situation or something?
Just bear with me, mate. Bear with me. So today it came out with record first half trading update, mate.
This
is a company, Pete, that bought Filter that you mentioned many, many moons ago.
Yeah.
Yeah? You remember Filter you mentioned ages ago, got taken over?
Yeah.
That acquisition has been pretty transformational for it. So full year expectations have been up to the top end of market forecasts.
Yeah.
Dividends have been increased by 50%, Pete. That's when you know a company's doing okay.
Yeah.
So everything's going tickety-boo. Group revenues increased 60% to 44.5 million. Adjusted earnings per share increased 51% to 4.07. And their full year to December 2022, analysts are forecasting revenues to grow by 58% to 91.2 million and EBITDA of 14.2 million. So that's definitely for one that I would like people to go out and research a bit more. If it's doing this well, considering all the noise it's had in the past 6 months, and that transformation of that purchase of filter is working for it. It's definitely one to keep an eye on. I don't own it, and as per usual, I'm just sharing one that I think could prove resilient. Hopefully Pete doesn't curse it by saying something about it and it ends up popping with a profit warning and the air goes out of it. But it's definitely one to keep an eye on, I think, regarding the transformational deal it's done in purchasing filter. And it seems to be doing well. And any stock that comes out, and this is something for people to keep an eye on, when a stock, a share, a fund, whatever, comes out and it's a dividend-paying stock, when it comes out and it shows you, and some people say 10%, but I'll say this, 15%, above 15% increase in its dividend, that's usually a really positive sort of tick box for me to say that this company and the management of this company are truly positive on what's going to happen over the next 6 months or year for them to increase that dividend by that much. So I just wanted people to just have a look at that. What did you see? What do you found on it, Pete?
Well, all I was noticed that the forecast PE is 21.1 according to SharePad, and yep, in 2 years it's 18.4, which isn't ridiculous, yep, if the company's, you know, integrating filter and it's coming out with really strong results. Forecast dividend 1.3% rising to 1.5% 2 years out. I got confused, yeah, because it was filter that was taken over, not Fran. Yeah. But I mean, I sort of know Fran reasonably well. I think it's a very interesting business because it's a collection of other businesses that are all franchise things, franchise brands, funnily enough. And yeah, I think it's an interesting stock, that, definitely.
I think the beauty of it is, and you've said it's a franchise of all these different brands, is that as one aspect of it isn't doing so well, the other one could be doing okay. And overall, exactly, the group does all right.
Yeah,
and if it's got certain brands and quite a few of those brands are doing okay, it will prove resilient.
Yeah. You know?
And that's the beauty of having all these different franchises. So I just saw that this morning. I thought, why haven't I looked at that recently? And it's probably because I've forgotten about it buying filter, Pete, which you mentioned a year ago, if not longer. So, yeah, it's definitely one, I think, to keep an eye on. I don't own it. Do you own it, Pete?
No. I mean, I've looked at it many a time and thought about it, but it's like you can't hold everything, can you? You know, and
and
I was saying, I think I mentioned it on Twitter recently, where I was saying that, you know, moving forward, I don't really want to buy any new positions. I want to use resources I have to put that money into positions I've already got. But I'm in no rush to be buying anything at the moment because, as we've discussed, I still think, I mean, judging by the price action in the last few days, it looks to me like the markets are starting to turn down again. I think it's incredibly likely we have an autumn sell-off. And, you know, before that's happened, I've got no interest in buying anything. Once we come out of the autumn, hopefully things might be, you know, in a more settled state. Who knows?
Mm.
But I just think it's a very, very risky time to be buying anything heavily, you know, like the ideas that we talk about on the podcast. I wouldn't say to anyone, rush out and buy it tomorrow. I'd say, take your time. There is no rush.
To your watch list. Absolutely. Research some, add them to your watch list and just consider, you know, if this share price is at £2 now, what price would I want to buy it at?
Yeah.
Or I'd like to buy it at £1.50. When it hits £1.50, have another look. And then when you're looking at it, where is the market going? Is it starting to go back up or is it still heading down? Then you might want to hold off,
yeah,
you know. But the thing that always intrigues me, Pete, is that markets are going up, right? The share price is £2. Market's going up, I'm going to buy it. Okay. Market's going down. The share price is 120. Are you going to buy it? No, because the market's going down.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's never easy.
Sometimes you've got to have a conviction to go against the market. The most money is made when you have a conviction of your own research, nobody else's research, your own research, that by buying this in 2 years or 3 years' time, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
What happens in the next 3 months or 6 months? I haven't got a Scooby-Doo. But the management, if they execute in 2 or 3 years' time, I will be okay. Yeah. I don't think enough people are looking beyond the next 3 weeks or the next 3 months, or like you say, you know, we've got to have a really terrible quarter in the latter part of the year.
Yeah, exactly. Mate,
Go on, give us one of your stocks, mate. We've done an hour, so come on.
You were saying with Fran that it has several, well, we were both saying it has several different businesses. One that's got several different divisions came out with an update today, which was pretty good. And that is Ricardo RCDO. I've talked a lot on the podcast, I'm sure, about Ricardo before. It's basically a sort of, it's got partly an automotive bit, but really it sees itself as a sort of environmental transportation group, but like a consultancy. But they've also got this
what
bit,
I was going to add,
yeah, they've got this bit where they make the engines for McLaren cars. They're also doing stuff with Aston Martin, and they're also they also do loads of Formula One stuff. And they do like they just, I mean, Ricardo as a company has been around for like 100 years, I think, you know, and it was in like petrol and diesel engines at the formation of the motor car, you know. But yeah, really interesting company. The results were good today. I think one of the divisions was perhaps not doing as well as the others, but you know, it was all pretty good. And I think it's one of those companies that could be taken over. I think, you know, it's such an established and well-known sort of business in these kind of sectors. It's an interesting company, and I don't think it's expensive. Let's just have a quick look on the old on the old pad.
Yeah. Don't forget, he's also involved in rail as well. A lot of ESG credentials.
Yeah, exactly.
And electric vehicles. Anything to do with testing, anything, use the word, you know, automotive, it's got its fingers in various different pies on that globally. I used to hold it, and then it was a case of some of their, you know, metrics kept drifting, and they're going to do that. And then I just got fed up, so I exited the stock. But they've done well in the past year and a half, share price.
Mate, I don't know if you've noticed as well, they've got new management, and that's something that always excites me. You know, when a company's been through tough times, getting new management is the road to the situation being...
Can be the road to, yeah.
Yeah, it tends to be. Right, so yeah, Ricardo on SharePad, forecast PE of 13, 2 years' time, 10.9. I mean, obviously, it all depends on the forecast being met or exceeded. Yeah. Forecast dividend, 2.3% rising to 2.6%. On SharePad, it's showing 71 million of debt. But in the update today, they said that debt has come down. I think they said it was around 50 or 45. It's something like that. So the situation's improving. So, you know, it's all good news. So, again, as we say, you know, at this time with markets like they are, with the economy in an absolute poo state, you know, we gotta be careful. But I think that's a very interesting company. I don't hold it.
Mm, cool. I wanted to share one last stock which I've kept my eye on for a slightly different reason, and that is Unilever, Pete. Ticker symbol ULVR, and it came out today with a half year trading update. And it just seems to be able to keep pushing its brands, you know. And we can't really include the most recent week where everyone would have been going out eating ice lollies and drinking lots of drink, which they're all involved in. But they seem to be having the pricing power to pass it on, Pete, structure-wise. And, you know, my concern with Unilever, because of the crunch that we're getting regarding people's pockets, they're going to go to, you know, non-branded items, if you use the word, unbranded stuff, and move down the actual metrics of what they're going to purchase. They're not going to use all these branded items and buy all these branded goods. But Unilever seems to be doing all right. The shares popped this morning. I'm not quite sure where they finished, but they were heading back towards 40 quid. And the reason why I was keeping an eye on them was because of my own holding, which was GSK, which has demerged Alien now. Which Unilever had bid for regarding 50 million, which got 50 billion, sorry, which got rejected.
Yeah.
Now, Alien's now sitting and listed on its own at 30 billion. So my thinking is they're doing well. Their share price increases. They come back in 6 months or a year and make a bid, but they're probably not going to bid 50 billion next time. They're probably going to be able to get away with bidding 40. And whether or not, you know, Alien becomes part of a larger Unilever group, if Unilever's got that wedge to actually do that. So I'm keeping an eye on how well they're doing, because that could be a good read across for Alien, which I do own. So that's interesting times. I think it's interesting that they're still able to push through all of their costs and their brands are still being bought at the moment, whether that continues the next 6 months, Pete.
The thing that stands out to me about Unilever is that it's got a forecast dividend yield, according to SharePad, of 3.7%, rising to 3.8%. Okay, in the context of extremely high inflation, 3.8% isn't necessarily the most exciting dividend yield you're going to get. But with Unilever, you've got a chance over time that if it's tucked away, in 10 years' time, there's a very good chance that the capital that you've put in as well has actually gone up quite a lot, I suspect. I think it's a company with some incredibly strong brands. I mean, I am stunned. I was really surprised. I was watching Ian King Sky News today at around, you know, half past 10 in the morning, whatever it was. And he was talking to the Unilever, is it Alan Jope or Alan Jope or something, the guy who's the CEO. And they were talking about how they've managed to pass their prices through and they've raised prices by 7%. Absolutely. And they were saying how inflation hasn't peaked, which is the really worrying thing. But I was really impressed that they've managed to do that, because I really thought, like you, that everyone was shopping in Aldi now, or if they were going in Tesco's, they were buying not even own labels, because Tesco's own label's too expensive. They're buying the ones no one's ever heard of, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was quite astonished. But I guess it's the power of brands, you know. It's why, you know, Persil and all the rest of them, it's like...
Yeah.
People are creatures of habit, you know, really bad at that. And it's like they always take that box of Persil off the shelf and they're going to keep doing that, you know, and until things get really bad, and then they'll be going.
Really bad. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Now, Pete, I'm conscious that we've been running for 75 minutes and we want these people to go out and enjoy their summer. Yeah. Do you want to add one last doc and then let's just call it quits, mate?
Well, do you know what? There is one that I'll raise. I'll raise you one.
Yeah. Go on, let's hear it.
Again, it's one where your thoughts would be interesting. It's Artisanal Spirits, ART. Yeah. And okay. it owns, I think it's called like the Scottish Whiskey Club or something, which is like a thing you can subscribe to and whatever. And I mean, they floated about a year ago. The shares have just been going down the whole time, but then that's the same with everything. But, you know, you think about it, Scotch whiskey, again, an incredibly powerful brand that, you know, with the trend towards long drinks as opposed to beers and opposed to, you know, whatever. So the idea, you know, cocktails, long drinks, which is why Fever has been doing so well. You know, I just think it's one of those things that could actually work out pretty well in time. Again, not something I would rush to buy straight away tomorrow, but it could. What's your thoughts on it? Do you think it could work or what?
Pete, the thing about these brands, depending on getting longevity with them, I like my whiskies. I collect certain bottles of. I don't drink them, right? And it's just an alternative investment, a bit like watches for me.
Yeah.
And they're not one of those collectors of brands. They're actually just purveyors of brands, and they sell them into shops and private collections and all the rest of it. It's a club, essentially, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a club, and they do all right. I think. The thing for me, mate, will be going forward, how much revenue do they generate when people pull in the reins? We keep talking about, you know, people reducing their spending, and whether that affects them or affects the larger companies like Diageo, we will see. I think the next 12 months we're going to see. I can't really comment on Artisanal, if that's how you pronounce it properly, because I haven't looked at it enough. But it's definitely a company which seems to have done the right things in the planning of how they listed, the marketing of how they're doing it. They've grown the base from what I've looked at historically of people becoming members of, you know, you're in this little membership and you will get first, use Northern term, first dibs on it, right?
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, this is how we're going to do it. And we're going to keep it quite private. We're going to keep it quite select. And you know what, from what I remember previously, they almost vet the people that are allowed to join. So you can't just go, hello, I'm Pete Wheely. You know who I am. I like to join.
From what I
remember, I could be wrong. They don't actually just take all comers. Wow. I could be wrong about that.
No.
If I remember rightly, I might be mixing it with something else because I've looked at quite a few of them before I joined a few. Yeah. So it's an interesting, definitely interesting one.
The thing that is relevant as well is I think it could be quite recession resilient because I think the sort of people who are going to be buying whiskies are going to be the wealthier people. There's no doubt about it. And so I think that's a factor. Looking on SharePad, there are no forecasts for profit or whatever, obviously, because it's, you know, fairly new listing and it's early days. But if you go to the financials tab and you go to the sort of right-hand side of the screen, if you see what I mean, and you get up the income, which is really the P&L, the profit and loss account. If you look on there under continuous operations, it's got turnover. They've got forecasts there. So if you look at the turnover, the history from 2018 I'll do it quickly, 12 million, 14 million, 15 million, 18 million in 2021. And then it forecasts to be 21 million, 25 million, and nearly 29 million in 2024. Mm-hmm. Now, they lost 2.7 million last year, but I suspect a lot of that was the IPO costs. So I think as the revenue ramps up, it should start moving into profit. So it's an interesting one, I think.
Okie dokie. Okie dokie. I'd like to call it a day there, Pete.
Cool,
I want to give a shout out to Steve Thompson, otherwise known as Tomo33S on Twitter, former rugby player who won the 2003 Cup with British Lions, etc. Bit of news this week that 200-odd nearly rugby players are now pursuing litigation against various federations and governing bodies of rugby due to dementia and head injuries and all kinds of other stuff that's going on regarding so many rugby players. Wow. So if you are a rugby fan, please send some love out there to various former rugby players, including captains of Wales, New Zealand, and so on and so on and so forth, all around the world who are going through quite a lot of trauma and difficulties regarding previous concussions that they've had. But on a lighter note, and we'd like to finish on a cheer here, we're hoping to have some good news tomorrow and hopefully in the middle of December regarding our very own Wheely dealer, who's going to have some more TLC care and attention to sort out the various issues that he's had over the past going on nearly 3 years now, Pete. You've endured it. So
it's been mental.
Send your prayers if you can to our own Mr. Wheeler Dealer. Send him some love.
Thank you very much.
In the meantime, folks, take care. Enjoy your summer. Get out when you can, when it's not too hot. Water your garden sparingly. You know, use the water out of the sink and recycle it onto the plants if you can. Put something out for put something out for the little hedgehogs, the little things that come into your garden, and the birds as well.
I got my birds, a
little bit of water out for them.
Yeah.
And just take care, people. Show some love, show some positivity. Do what you can for others. Do what you can for the charities. And above all, look after your loved ones. We don't know how long we've got them around. You know, go and see your aunts, your uncles, your nannies, your granddads, whoever you've got. Go and see them while you can. Cherish them. Stay blessed. Bye for now.
Thank you. See ya.
This Twin Peaks Investing podcast is brought to you in association with ShearPad, from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.